SQPN.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. Joining me today to talk about the latest Hobbit news, either from Middle-earth or from New Zealand, is Dave Kale. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Father Roderick. Good afternoon to you, I guess.
It's afternoon evening here in Holland. It's good to talk to you because we have an exciting episode in front of us. We have, ahead of us, we have so much cool news, including more photos, more tidbits from what happened on the set in Matamata, and a lot of interviews from people involved in the production. And I can't wait to hear your take on this week's news. And of course, if we have some extra time, we might, make a little excursion into the realm of speculation and talk about how all this news might affect the story that we will see in the final movies. So let's go ahead with the big news this week.
You're done. Confound it all, Samwise Gamgee! Have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't dropped no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
Very exciting talk on various websites, movie-related websites, about a possible Hobbit teaser trailer coming soon. It is, of course, the thing that really makes you feel that the movie is now imminent and it's coming and it's for real. And I remember the excitement about the teaser trailer for The Hunger Games, which is another huge franchise that will start, at least in the movies, next year. And I cannot wait to see a Hobbit teaser trailer. So what have we heard, Dave?
Yeah, this would be a really, as somebody said, I think, on the My Middle Earth News, this would be a really excellent Christmas present.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, it came in an interview that IGN did with Andy Serkis. They were just talking to him about a variety of things, and they just happened to sort of, surprisingly, they brought up The Hobbit, it's a shocker. But he said, they were saying, hey, are we going to see a trailer or anything anytime soon? He said, there will be a trailer fairly soon, actually, around Christmas time, I believe. And so that set the Twitter sphere ablaze. So people are speculating that maybe it'll be attached to Sherlock Holmes, A Game of Shadows, or possibly for The Adventures of Tintin, which are both being released in the U.S. Right around Christmas. Sherlock's on December 16th. Tintin's on December 21st. Tintin would kind of make sense since that's Peter Jackson's film.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that Tintin could use the push if people are really excited about the trailer, they might actually have an extra incentive to go see Tintin, which of course in itself is already worth watching. But if that is the place where you can see this new trailer, that would certainly work. And of course, keep in mind that Tintin is a 3D movie and The Hobbit is 3D. So I think it makes more sense that they do that in a 3D theater rather than attach it to Sherlock, which is probably just a 2D movie. Just thinking out loud.
Well, and also you can kind of imagine. So we talked about this before a little bit about Tintin, about how it's just absolutely huge in Europe, and that's why they released it there first. And maybe people in the U.S. don't know it quite as well. I could imagine a strategy where, like a week before the Tintin film launches, they maybe put a leak out that says, there's rumors the Hobbit trailer will be attached to the Tintin movie. And maybe if there's a lot of people that were sort of like, I don't know if I'm going to see that, I don't really know anything about it, that might put them over sort of the edge and be like, I should definitely go see Tintin now because I'll get to see the Hobbit trailer.
Of course. And think of the cross-promotional value of this. Andy Serkis is going to make the rounds of all the TV shows trying to promote Tintin. Perhaps even Peter Jackson is going to do that. Steven Spielberg certainly will. But I can also imagine that a lot of high-profile TV shows might think, you know, Tintin, we don't have a big audience for that because Tintin is not very well known in the United States. But if we can ask a few questions about The Hobbit, now then we have a totally different angle to the story. And if we can combine the two, they might get much more exposure than if it were just Tintin. So my bet is that we will see the Hobbit teaser trailer before Christmas. And how cool would that be indeed, a Christmas present? And of course, the question is, what will we see? Will we see just a few glimpses, as in a lot of these trailers, where it's just a minute long and basically they don't reveal anything? Or will they show us more? Of course, a lot of this stuff is not even filmed yet, let alone post-production.
Yeah, that's it's hard to. I don't have any idea what they would put in it.
I'm thinking two things that they might put into it. Again, keeping in mind that everybody still remembers The Lord of the Rings, and you want to get that same audience to go and watch The Hobbit, or at least perk their interest, because I do still think that a lot of people that watched The Lord of the Rings are not even aware that currently The Hobbit is in production. I hear that a lot. It's like people are they doing The Hobbit? Although they did enjoy The Lord of the Rings. So I'm thinking perhaps they will show the same scene from The Lord of the Rings where Bilbo finds the ring and we see this glimpse of Gollum. But then we would see it in the new version with the new Bilbo and perhaps the new Gollum. Because everybody remembers that scene. So it would be instant recognition and brand recognition in a way. It's like, oh, The Hobbit. Wow, it's back. And then I also think that they need to show at least a Shire or something Hobbit-related. I don't think that they will show... perhaps they might show the dragon if they already have done some work on it. But I guess for most of the people, if they think Hobbit, they think of Bilbo. And that's it. And about the Shire. And it's very possible that a lot of people don't even remember the rest of the story.
I think that's an excellent point. I think that's a very interesting point, especially if you imagine that this trailer has to sort of it has to be aimed at multiple audiences, but maybe they're the most bang for their buck comes from trying to market it to not us, the hardcore people that know are following every little thing, but sort of at the general audience that may be sort of vaguely aware that a Hobbit movie's coming.
Exactly.
So that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that, but as you started to say, I was thinking, I'm sure this trailer will start out with content from The Lord of the Rings.
It needs to have Gollum, because Gollum is the character that most people remember. Plus, you can bet that Andy Serkis is going to do all the rounds of the talk shows, because he's done that for Tintin as well. So they need something to provide a hook for every interview. So the first question will be, so Andy Serkis, how was it to be back as Gollum? So Gollum needs to be in the teaser. I think it needs to have the ring somehow, because then you'll have a second hook to talk about The Lord of the Rings and make the transition to, well, we've seen The Lord of the Rings. Now you get to see how that whole story came about. Mm-hmm. And then I think it needs to have Bilbo as the Hobbit, so they can do the thing with, well, we knew Frodo, we knew, you know, the old Bilbo, but this is the young Bilbo, and they can do the interviews with the younger crew. And I think you need perhaps a glimpse at the end, just a very brief, like 1 second of the dragon and the treasure or something like that. Like I don't know. And perhaps some dwarves too. I know my list is getting longer, but it needs to have a few, and it needs
to
have a joke.
They should just release the whole movie.
It needs to have something funny in it as well. Yeah, they could also release the whole movie, but somehow, I don't think that. Don't hold your breath for that. But I think it also needs probably some quirky thing or a joke at the end. They did that with all the teaser trailers for the Lord of the Rings trilogy as well. Oh, I'm excited. And of course, music. It needs the part of the new soundtrack, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps it will have the Hobbit theme from from the Fellowship of the Ring. Who knows? If it's not ready, because I can imagine that work on the soundtrack is still underway, and it might not be, you know, before they actually sit down and score it. That might actually be kept for the very last moment. So they might just recycle some music.
Yeah, I'm kind of. It strikes me as though perhaps their strategy here might be to use some of the recognizable Lord of the Rings music.
Could be.
One other thing, interesting thing in the IGN article where they mentioned the teaser trailer is at the end. Andy Serkis shares some thoughts about shooting at 48 frames, and he says that it's really, really different. He said he specifically says, here's his quote, the brain has become so attuned to watching films at 24 frames a second. This is something completely different. It's incredible. You feel inside it and surrounded by it. It's really great. People will not be disappointed.
Cool. But can they show it? Because a lot of the theaters don't have that 48 frames per second.
Oh, you mean for the trailer?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, probably not.
So I don't know. I really don't know how that works. If they can, if theaters will have to buy new equipment, or if I guess in the United States, a lot of the theaters have switched to digital projection, so that mm-hmm. might not be such a problem actually to do 48 frames, because it's there's no film involved anyway. In mm-hmm. older European theaters, it's going to be a big problem, because even 3D is already a challenge, let alone, you know, 48 frames per second and 3D and, I don't know, super high resolution. Wow. Well, that's what geeks do, right? They talk for 20 minutes about a non-existent teaser trailer.
That's exactly right.
Well, that's also why our listeners are listening, right?
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yes, unless they switched off. some speculation in the news about whether The Hobbit will be perhaps even bigger than The Lord of the Rings. And I assume that the article implies bigger in terms of box office success, right?
Yep, that is correct. Specifically, the person doing the speculation is Elijah Wood.
Huh, interesting. And so yeah. What does he say? What makes him think that this is going to be bigger?
Well, he just says, I don't even know if they're, so let's see, where's his quote? He says, they asked him, what does it take to outshine Lord of the Rings money-making glory? And Elijah Wood says, I don't even know if they're meaning to outdo them, but he follows that up with saying, they're going to be big. The audience is huge. The anticipation for The Hobbit has been massive for so long. Let's see. He goes on to say, the idea is that there are things actually happening historically at the same time of the story of The Hobbit is taking place. They just weren't written in The Hobbit. They're written in appendices and external pieces. That's kind of where a lot of that's coming from. So they're, you know, this is talking about sort of the material that Jackson's adding that isn't explicitly in the book. And he finally says, it's going to feel like a nice transitional piece. I think it's going to be a great amalgam of a fresh new approach with places we've never seen before in Middle Earth mixed with things that are very familiar to us. It will be a beautiful transition. I'm excited about it. I can't wait. So, doesn't look like he ever actually says, I think this will make more money than Lord of the Rings, but he sounds pretty confident that it will be big.
Excellent.
I'm inclined to agree that it probably will do.
Well, and he's been on the set, and he's seen what kind of production this is. So, and he has actually he watched the footage and everything in full glory. So, yeah, I tend to have confidence in a statement like that.
Yes.
He also talked in the interview about some of the controversy about the way that the story is told, and that of course is something that we are always very interested in. Here on The Secrets of The Hobbit, because there are still a lot of questions, especially from people that don't really know very much about the production, is like, well, wait a minute, is Frodo in The Hobbit? Is Peter Jackson crazy? Doesn't he know that that is not working? And I actually I've been following some Twitter streams, and this is a recurring question on Twitter. People are stunned to hear that Orlando Bloom and Elijah Wood are in The Hobbit, and they think it's a mistake. They believe that that is actually, that they're going to play different roles, or that somehow Peter Jackson is going to mess up the timeline, which is not the case. But Elijah Wood talks about it in that interview, and he says the idea is that there are things actually happening historically at the same time the story of The mm-hmm. Hobbit is taking place. They just weren't written in The Hobbit, he said. They were written in appendices and external pieces. That's kind of where a lot of that is coming from. So
yes, exactly. Yep, so... Anyway, it's interesting, and it's nice to see. I guess it's good. I guess the nice thing to see is that he's really excited.
Yeah.
So we can also be excited. If he was sort of more like, you know, yeah, well, it's been good to be back in New Zealand and the movie's going okay, that would be disappointing. But
they paid me well.
It instills confidence that all of the actors involved, particularly the ones who are back from Lord of the Rings, which I guess is the sum total of those is him and Andy Serkis, are so excited about it.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get to talk about the Ain't It Cool News reporter later on in the show. Mm-hmm. If you read that report, I mean, who is not excited about this movie? It is so awesome. The little glimpses that we get, it's just the amount of effort that goes into this production. Mm-hmm. And the love, honestly, for the story. It's amazing. But before we go there, there's another article about The Hobbit moving to Otago.
Yep.
And so apparently they wrapped up filming in Matamata, on the Northern Island, and now the next destination for the crew is going to be Otago. So what do we know about Otago and what's going to happen there?
So... people had mentioned seeing 6 helicopters, a giant marquee, security guards, and dozens of trailers being parked just east of Hyde for the last few days. But what's very interesting is that the residents there are keeping mum. That's the title of one of the articles that we found at odt.co.nz. That apparently the you ask anybody and they won't tell you. They'll say they don't know anything about it. Yeah, I heard maybe there's a rumor about some Hobbit filming, but I don't know anything about all those helicopters and trailers over there. So they're really trying to exercise, you know, very tight control over the information and the spoilers and leaks and whatnot. The OneRing.net in particular has had a lot of sort of, if you go over to their site, there's actually just been a slew over the last few days of photos and things like that, but I didn't include them in the notes and didn't want to spend a lot of time on them because, quite frankly, it's pretty nebulous. It's sort of pictures of like trailers parked out in the middle of nowhere or just pictures of the area. So it's not, I don't think it's that interesting. There's not a whole lot of substance, but. So there's one guy from a hotel there, that they talked to who says, that they were sworn to secrecy about the filming. But that some of those involved were staying in her establishment. We do have some people staying here, but we don't have the top brass. We've still got more cyclists than hobbits, she said. So it sounds like Peter Jackson hasn't shown up yet.
Apparently, the production was plagued by bad weather and rain mostly, but they still managed to film, which is also something that I wondered about the scenes in the Shire, because according to the guy in from Ain't It Cool News, they had days where it was blue skies and sunshine, and other days where it was just overcast, and apparently they were just continuing to shoot. So I wonder if that will introduce continuity problems where in one scene, you know, the sun is shining and in the other scene it's kind of overcast. I don't know how they're going to solve that because it's not something you can fix in post-production. You can tweak the color temperature a little bit, but you cannot replace an overcast sky and the kind of diffused lighting, the light that it gives with like bright sunshine and shadows and everything. So it's always something that makes me a little bit nervous. Like that's a trouble of filming out in the open. It's way more fragile and you can't control the weather circumstances. So hopefully they'll have the weather that they need. Now I thought that Otago was actually near a lake, but as far as I can tell, I'm looking in Google Earth, Otago is right there in the heart of the southern island, and there's not much in the area, as far as I can tell. There are bigger lakes up north to the northwest and the northeast, Lake Aviemore, Lake Benmore, and on the west side, Lake Hawea and Lake Wanaka. But Otago, I don't know. Do we know anything about that area? The photos on the OneRing.net, do they show us what kind of area it is? Is it mountainous? Is it?
It mostly appears to be sort of fields and rolling hills.
Oh, really?
That's everything I saw looked like a sort of open fields and rolling hills. No, not a whole lot in the way of water. Not a lot in the way of like real mountains or even forests. So, you know, I'm not claiming to have looked through everything, but I didn't really see anything. I don't have any good sense of what they might be filming there.
Huh. Well, I wonder if I'm looking at the right Otago here. There's just one photo of that area. It's the Otago Central Rail Trail in New Zealand. It's basically one big rail bridge that is built there. And the area seems extremely boring. I have no other words for it. There's nothing special to it. It's just flat hills. It's nothing spectacular. So perhaps this could just be part of an area that they just travel through, or I don't know. It's nice. It's a panoramic photo, so I can look around. Oh, wait a second. There are a few more photos here. Yeah, it almost looks like the Northern Island, actually, now that I think of it. So I have no idea what they could be filming here. Hmm. All right. Well. No.
Yep. I don't know. I don't know.
Nothing else. Yeah. I have no clue. We should probably just ask around and see if anyone has any guesses. And if our listeners have an idea what they might be filming there, just let us know. Send us an email at tolkien@sqpn.com, and we'd love to hear your take on this. In other news, let's see what else is going on. Ian McKellen has been updating his blog. It's been a while. So
he did update his blog. He hasn't been, but he finally did after a sort of a long break. His last post was May 31st.
Holy moly.
And he recently he updated on November 11th. So we went 6 months.
So what does he write?
Yeah, in like a 10 paragraph post, the last paragraph had anything to do with The Hobbit. It was a lot of just sort of reminiscing about his career and about different characters that he's played. And in particular about sort of a lot of the stuff that he's done on the stage. A lot of Shakespearean stuff. And then also speculating or reminiscing about Friends. In terms of Hobbit stuff, in the very last paragraph, he says, I'll just read the whole thing because there's not much. Musings during a long wait today, which has been a respite from a lot of fighting in Middle-earth. In The Hobbit, Gandalf is part old duffer, but he's a soldier. Peter Jackson, who likes to see the old guys fighting it out, reminded me the other day that Gandalf is a commander, a general. Having slain the great goblin, I was being a bit too indulgent with the dwarves, who meanwhile had mislaid Bilbo in the goblin tunnels. I've played enough soldiers to see that PJ was right, and in the next take, I was very stern.
Ah, cool.
And there's a parrot. There's a picture at the bottom of Gandalf, and this is from The Hobbit. Yes. Is Gandalf the Grey, and he's wielding his sword. And there's some production people in the background. So
he looks very stern in that photo, very concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, exciting. It's interesting to hear that tidbit about Peter Jackson's direction and Peter providing the actors with some backstory to the characters and why they should play scenes in a different way sometimes. I think that is probably what makes Peter Jackson such a fantastic director for The Hobbit, because he has all this background knowledge. He knows the lore so well and the books of Tolkien so well that it helps him, I think, in making the right decisions in terms of how a scene should work, not just from a cinematic point of view, but just considering the backstory and what we know of all these characters. However, Peter Jackson is also open to ideas from his actors. And if you'll allow me, I know that we had scheduled this originally for later on in the show, but I want to move over to Ain't It Cool News and the third report from Quint on the set of The Hobbit. This is the last report from the set in Matamata, and it is filled with very, very interesting information, both about the set and the location and what happened there over the past few weeks. But in the final part of his article, there's a very interesting tidbit about a scene that takes place in The Hobbit. And he gives a warning that it is a bit of a spoiler, because he describes the scenes of Bilbo coming back to the Shire and what happens when he returns to the Shire and what he finds there. And so I invite you to just go over to the original article yourself and read up on the information that he gives about the scenes at the beginning of the story that he talks about. But here in the final part of the second movie, so we're only going to see this in the second movie, of course, Bilbo is returning to Hobbiton, and according to Quint, these scenes are a bit more... Oh, this is my phone making a lot of noise. Wait a minute, I'm in Middle Earth now. You guys call back when I'm out of Middle Earth. So the first scenes are cheerful, and Bilbo is full of energy and wants to go on this adventure, and his tookish side is clearly showing. However, when he returns, the situation is not as cheerful. It's actually a bit more melancholy. The quest is done, friends have died, Bilbo's exhausted, not to mention a bit shell-shocked. I'm reading this from Quint's report. And he finally gets home to find that all his stuff is on the lawn. How's that for a welcome back? Having been gone for 13 months, Bilbo was presumed dead, and there's an auction for his possessions, which the Sackville Bagginses are very happy about. Some hobbit infighting, I love that. Now, Quint talked briefly with Martin Freeman about this section, and he mentioned that he wanted to play it a bit harder than Peter was probably expecting. He's not happy to see people making off with his possessions, and after a hard journey, he is not the same laid-back hobbit as the one who left. That was Freeman's thought, anyway, and from what I could see being filmed, Jackson agreed that when he stands up for himself, it should be done with more force than you'd expect. The man is not screaming and knocking fools out, but he's noticeably stronger and more confident than he was before. I liked reading that. I loved the fact that Martin Freeman is actively thinking about and placing himself in Bilbo's, I was going to say in Bilbo's shoes, but that doesn't make sense, in Bilbo's feet, trying to, he's thinking on his feet about how to portray the... Let's say the battle-hardened, experienced Bilbo, and I love it that he actually has his own suggestions on how to make the scene stronger and more consistent with what happened in all these adventures, and to see that Peter Jackson actually agrees with that. It's one of the, I think, best qualities of a director is to listen to the input of the actors. It's something that I think made a movie like Empire Strikes Back. By the way, this is the obligatory Star Wars reference in this episode, courtesy of Father Roderick, Star Wars geek. But Empire Strikes Back is still loved so much up until today because the Irving Kashner was the director. Actually, was very much influenced by Carrie Fisher, by Harrison Ford. They had some very specific ideas on how they wanted to play the scenes, and it was not the way the scene was described in the actual script by George Lucas. And so it just made the whole movie so much more powerful, which you can tell that these actors really believe what they play. And in other movies, when a director is kind of trying to control everything or micromanage everything, including the way the actors perform, that often results in a much weaker performance and less convincing storytelling. So I'm excited.
Yeah, it is kind of heartening to hear that it's going smoothly, that there seems to be a good relationship between the production staff and Peter and the actors, and it's very interesting. I'm glad they're keeping that scene in of Bilbo coming back and finding all of his stuff being sold off and confronting the Sackville Bagginses over it, because, you know, I was kind of curious to see if they might sort of change around the ending a little bit here, kind of the way they did with Lord of the Rings.
I guess the
ending is a little more sort of straightforward here. They don't have the same challenges that they would have had trying to do the scouring of the Shire in Lord of the Rings.
It's going to be a strange ending, because you've been in all these amazing adventures. We've seen the dragon. Mm-hmm. There's all this excitement and action and sacrifice and whatnot and people dying, and then we get back to the Shire, and it's almost like, oh, it's still totally the Shire, and no one here moved on, or actually everybody moved on, but nobody really changed in the Shire. It's still the same old Hobbiton with the same nasty habits from those hobbits. It's going to be interesting to see the way Bilbo reacts to that, and the contrast will show us as the viewers how much he has been changed by the adventure. But
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the tone of that scene is. It sounds like it's going to be a little more serious than maybe is even in the book, because it's sort of in that part of the book. The Hobbit's a, you know, it's such a strange book, because it really there's those chapters toward the end, the Battle of the Five Armies, and the chapters right around it where Bilbo like steals the Arkenstone and gives it to Bard and the King of the Elves, so that they can negotiate with the dwarves, where it really sort of the tone rapidly starts changing from the really lighthearted, humorous kind of children's tale that the rest of the book feels like into something much more serious, feeling more like Lord of the Rings. And then at the end of the book, we kind of get, as Bilbo returns to the Shire, we sort of get a reversal back into kind of the more humorous feeling. When, yeah. You know, I mean, like the Sackville Bagginses occupying Bag End and selling off his stuff is kind of portrayed as kind of this humorous thing. Even though Bilbo does go in and take care of it, it's kind of lighthearted again. And it sounds like they're maybe going a little more serious here, although I expect that it'll still be kind of humorous, at least compared to the rest of the film. I'm going to be very interested to see this. This again just sort of brings up the question of what is the tone of the movie going to be, and how much of it are they going to keep close to the sort of the original humor of the book, and how much of it is going to be, trying to make it feel more like the epic feel of the Lord of the Rings films. So,
what do you think the last scene will be? What will be the last thing we see in the movie?
Oh, that's a good question. Do you think they will return to the frame story?
Well, that's what I've been wondering. I don't think so. I don't think that would make sense.
I kind of suspect it would seem odd to not return, to not reframe it with Frodo. I mean, I sort of, just off the top of my head, I'm sort of thinking that the films are going to start and end, both films, each film. So the first film will start and end, the second film will start and end with Elijah Wood and Ian Holm. But, you know, maybe after, especially when you, probably if you count up all the extra, the extended editions, these will probably end up each being like 3.5 hour movies. So maybe after 7 or 8 hours of Martin Freeman and the dwarves and stuff, maybe it'll feel weird to finish with Frodo. So maybe they won't do that.
That's exactly how I'm feeling. I was like, I don't know if I want to return to Frodo, which really has no reason to be there, because he doesn't merit it. He didn't play any role in it. So
yeah,
I wanted to have Bilbo.
But then the frame feels strange. If the frame is just half a frame, you know what I mean? It's like an introduction, and then we just stick with we won't go back to Elijah Wood, the actor, on screen, but maybe it'll finish with some kind of voiceover by Ian Holm or something like that. I don't know. It seems like this is fraught. This could be a real challenge to do this correctly without it feeling weird. That if we start the film off with scenes from the long expected party, it will feel weird not to go back to it if this is the frame story. But at the same time, it would be very strange to finish on on actors who've been on screen for probably less than like 1% of the film.
Yes, that's how I feel. I think somehow the voiceover idea is actually a very good one. I think we could see a scene from the time frame of The Hobbit, and then hear, I don't know, Frodo talking, or perhaps even a scene where, you know, I always imagine the end of a story to be, you know, Bilbo back in the Shire, sitting on his front porch, smoking his pipe, and then just reminiscing and enjoying the Hobbit life, and appreciating it probably much more. And then somehow that's kind of what Frodo and Bilbo also do at the beginning of The Lord of the Rings, where it's kind of a relaxed setting. I don't know. It just,
well, especially I'm kind of wondering if they're doing this as a frame story of elderly Bilbo telling the story to Frodo or something like that, mm-hmm. which it sounds like they're, I'm sort of inclined to think that they're not, but imagine that they are. If they did, then maybe there'll be voiceovers from Ian Holm throughout the film so that we kind of remain kind of familiar. We continue interacting with him. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he's sort of like, as they transition from one scene to the next, like as they're heading into Mirkwood, we get a brief voiceover from Ian Holm sort of saying something about Mirkwood, maybe quotes from the book or something. So then maybe it would be appropriate to finish with, you know, sort of one of those panning out type shots of the Shire away from Bag End into the Shire as a whole. And Ian Holm finishing off with maybe like the last line from the book or something.
That could be the way it is done. Because I was thinking, did we have true voiceovers in The Lord of the Rings? We had, of course, the voiceover at the beginning of the story with the whole mythology, with Galadriel doing the voiceover.
Not really. We just had the intro.
Are you sleeping?
excuse me. We just had the intro from Galadriel, and then I don't think we ever had voiceovers again.
I think the moments that you think it's voiceover, it's actually Bilbo writing his book or something like that. There's this moment where he, in the extended edition, where he reads the beginning of The Hobbit.
Oh, yeah. There is the sort of concerning Hobbits part at the beginning.
But he's writing it down. Too. I mean, he's just talking to himself while writing, so that makes sense.
So maybe it wouldn't be so strange to start out with Long Expected Party and never return to it, because they totally do that, you know, and you've reminded me, they do that in The Lord of the Rings. They start out first with this Galadriel giving us an introduction to the history of the ring and of Middle-earth.
Yep.
Then we get this just bizarre sort of pseudo-documentary thing with Ian Holm as Bilbo telling us about hobbits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reading stuff from the actual Hobbit book, not Lord of the Rings. And then we never really do either of those devices again. The rest of the films are just sort of straightforward films. And then we finish on just Sam coming back and saying, well, I'm back. So maybe we could start out with Ian Holm introducing us to the story in the time frame of Lord of the Rings and then never coming back to it, and just finishing with Bilbo at Martin Freeman at Bag End. So
who knows?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Let's take a short break.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. This is wonderful.
I meant to go back. Wander the paths of Mirkwood. Visit Lake Town. See the Lonely Mountain again. That age, it seems, has finally caught up with me.
It's time to mention our sponsors briefly for this episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. And one of our sponsors is Amazon, the Amazon store, this huge Amazon store where you get the best deals. And especially now in the months of November and December, we love to buy presents, but the economy is not as good as it used to be. So we want to have good deals, and Amazon having that huge market share, and they are able to negotiate a lot of deals, not to mention that they have so much in store. So there's always something interesting to find for a great price. Now, if you are considering to go shopping at Amazon for instance, Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, that's a day not only in the United States Amazon store, but also in all the other Amazon stores. It's a day where you will find amazing deals, and you can pick up the most awesome books or gadgets or games or whatever for almost nothing. But if you do that, think of The Hobbit. Think of our show before you go there. And it will only take you one minute, not even, just 30 seconds. Just go to sqpn.com or go to thehobbit.sqpn.com and click on that Amazon link. And then just do whatever you normally do on the Amazon store. And automatically, Amazon will support our podcast and our hosting fees. And we really need your help because we are not making any money with these shows. We're putting in a lot of our time and effort to bring you these episodes every week. So we hope that in return, you'll think of us when you're doing your Amazon shopping. By the way, it's a good time to go to our SQPN blog, especially to the Hobbit blog, because I reskinned it, and so I think it looks a lot better. We've got bigger pictures. It's more news, so it's a lot of fun. You can just go to thehobbit.sqpn.com, and if you're surfing and looking for SQPN stuff, here's another thing that you might want to be checking out. And that is, I don't know if you've heard about ABC's new TV show called Once Upon a Time. It is a show that is produced by a number of people that were also heavily involved in Lost. And Lost was kind of the biggest TV franchise for a long time. And I don't know. I don't think that there's ever been a good successor to Lost. A lot of TV shows have tried and failed. But this new TV show, Once Upon a Time, is based upon fairy tales, all the fairy tales that we know and love. But the original idea is, and it's similar to another show on NBC called Grimm, but Once Upon a Time, I think, does it a lot better. The fairy tale characters, by a curse, are brought to our world. And so we get constant flashbacks of who they were in the enchanted forest in the fairy tale land, but we also get to see their quest now to somehow reestablish the order in the universe or somehow get back to fairy tale land. We don't know what's going to happen. What I do know is that every episode feels like Lost. It's incredible storytelling, keeps you on the edge of your seat. The characters are incredible. The acting is fantastic. It's beautifully done, including the fairy tale scenes. It just looks like a movie. And so I keep thinking, if you like The Hobbit, if you like the world of Tolkien, you will like Once Upon a Time. And of course, since it's such an amazing show, we decided to make a podcast about it. And this is our youngest show, and you can find it on the website onceuponatime.sqpn.com. So that's onceuponatime.sqpn.com. We're also on Twitter, on Facebook, and in the iTunes store. Go check it out. If you like this podcast, if you like this kind of stuff, and you want to have a podcast that speculates and talks about the story and what will happen next, you want to listen to The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Again, the URL is onceuponatime.sqpn.com.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
And we're back in Middle Earth. And it's time for the slightly smaller news. And as usual, we have this long, long list of all sorts of little and bigger things to talk about. I don't know if we'll be getting to the end, but let's give it a try, Dave. What's next on
our
list?
Well, very briefly, it sounds like I still can't find the exact details, but it sounds like Elijah Wood's going to do an interview on BBC One Radio on Saturday.
Ooh, nice.
With a lady named Edith Bowman. And so I put it in the show notes. I put a link to the BBC program page, but I haven't found Elijah on there yet specifically.
They will probably post it later on, and you can probably listen to the interview after it's done, mm-hmm. because I see that they have like 3-hour interviews here from previous episodes on the website. So we'll include a link on our show notes on thehobbit.sqpn.com.
Yeah, so I'll be listening. Okay, so let's see. Looks like Edith, I clicked on Saturday on their schedule, and it looks like Edith Bowman goes on at 7 p.m. I'm guessing that's Greenwich Mean Time. Yeah. No, not 7 p.m., 7 a.m., Greenwich Mean Time. So That's probably when it will be. She does a 3-hour show.
Late at night for you guys. But, I'll just go to that website the next day and it'll probably be there.
But I think Edith Bowman has a, or either that or BBC One does, has a Facebook page that you can click on. And you can post comments that maybe they'll ask questions of. Yeah, there we go. So if you go to the BBC One Radio Facebook page, they actually say specifically, Edith's got Elijah Wood on the show Saturday. Any questions for him? So if you want to ask a question, go on Facebook and like the BBC One Radio page, and then you can post your questions that you want them to ask him.
Very cool. Well, I say take advantage of
some better questions than some of the questions that are on here already. Some of these questions are pretty – wow, these are really lame questions. Like, what role are you going to play in the new Hobbit film since Frodo isn't in the original book? Come on, buddy. We've been told this before already. Ask a better question.
Yeah. Well, our audience is very educated, so I'm pretty sure that they can ask some very good questions. I'm not sure if they will answer all those questions, though.
No, although I actually think you'll have a pretty good chance right now, because at least half the questions that are on here, there's about 20 questions so far, and it's mostly drivel. So,
good, excellent. We're counting on our audience. Make sure you squeeze every bit of information out of Elijah Wood, will you? For us, so we have something to talk about next week.
Yes. I think you can also email questions to Edith Bowman directly, too.
Perfect. Again, the link is in our show notes.
Mm-hmm. Another quick article is from the Irish Times. Apparently, Christopher Lee is receiving the Bram Stoker Gold Medal in Dublin. I don't know what exactly this award is for. I think it has something to do with sort of, you know, just acting in horror films and stuff like that. But yeah, so he received the it's an honor from the Trinity College Philosophical Society, which counts Bram Stoker amongst its past presidents.
Nice, nice, nice. Well deserved for Mr.
Yes,
Saruman.
Absolutely.
Saruman the Wise.
There's also there's a really fun article on HelloMagazine.com. It's sort of a in their travel section about Lord of the Rings locations in New Zealand, and it's a fun little sort of travel article describing the locations and the scenery and that kind of stuff. So that I'd recommend people go read it if they're interested in travel and locales and stuff, or if they've been to New Zealand or want to go to New Zealand. It's a fun article. And then at artstars.us, which is a site about and for people who do production design and art on films, there's an interview with Grant Major, who worked on the Lord of the Rings films and I believe is working on The Hobbit now.
Nice.
Yeah, which is, again, it's sort of a nice, like, it's kind of a, you know, it's not, they don't spend a whole lot of time, you know, it's not a good place to go and get tidbits about The Hobbit, you know, and spoilers and stuff, but it's a very interesting article about production design and designing sets. He talks a lot about working with Weta, talks about some of the other films that he's worked on, like King Kong and a new film that he's working on called The Emperor, which is about Emperor Hirohito from Japan. So it's an interesting profile piece of a guy that sounds very, very interesting. So
I love that kind of information. I enjoy that almost as much as the story related stuff. I just always want to know how a movie is made, especially if it's such an epic movie production as The Hobbit. And yep. There was on FresnoBee.com an interview with Luke Evans, who of course
that was a good one.
Is Bart the Bowman, and and it's a good interview. It's long. So highly recommend it. Let's see if there.
And they
some
also they're describing several interviews, and so they also at the second half of the article is also there's an interview with John Cho and Cal Penn, who are in Harold and Kumar. But John Cho, of course, is also Sulu in the new Star Trek films.
Oh, cool!
In case you're a Star Trek
yes,
fan,
yes,
which I'm sure you are.
Filming is starting in January. I'm all excited about it. The third draft is done, and yeah, the most of the pre-production is ready. Oh, I love Star Trek. Cool. Mm-hmm. But is there any information about the story in the interview? I'm just quickly reading through it.
I don't see a lot. It's more they're just asking him about his experience. One thing that I saw that fans were really sort of excited about this garnered him a lot of cred with the fandom. And one thing I saw is that he mentioned sort of what it was like when the new actors first got to wander around all the sets and they first went into Bag End.
Yes.
He says, I was like, expletive deleted. I actually walked into Bilbo's house. It was the most amazing thing. I'll never forget these moments, so I can't wait to go back, to be honest. Fantastic. And so fans were all sort of a Twitter about that.
Oh, wow.
You know, like, oh, you know, we love you, Luke, and it's so nice of you to, you know, we're so happy that you're such a big fan type stuff. So
nice.
But yeah, they didn't get any details out of him. Doesn't look like it's more about sort of what's it been like for you? Is it going to change your life and that kind of stuff? So
speaking of walking around in Hobbiton, that was another very interesting part of the interview or the article by Quint on Ain't It Cool News. Because he talks at length about how they built the set this time to last and to become this new travel destination for Hobbit fans and Tolkien fans. And the difference with the previous set that they built for The Lord of the Rings is tremendous. A lot of the Hobbit holes this time, instead of just being a front, mostly done in plywood, are actually carved out in the hill, and they have waterproof roofs and everything. There was also an extensive rescue program put in place for the party tree. Remember, I told you that when I visited New Zealand, the party tree was in really bad shape because of a few storms, and also the fact that in that area they hadn't had rain for many seasons, and so the tree was really sick. And and you could tell that. And one of the big questions that the people that did the tour of the premises had was like, how are we going to cover this up for the next movie, you know? Because the tree is supposed to be younger. It's certainly not supposed to look like this, because we know from The Lord of the Rings what it looks like. And so, according to Quint, and I thought it was amazing, they have they came up with a whole irrigation program for that tree, and they had like a couple of people working every day in Middle Earth, in Metameta, for years, ever since. I think they've been building that set for from 2009 till today, and so every day there have been at least three people on location to take care of the tree, to take care of the environment. And apparently, according to the photos that you see on Ain't It Cool News, the tree is definitely looking a lot better than it looked when I was there. I'm amazed. I really
it is. It's amazing, though. The army, I was reading that too, the army of people they employed to do the sort of landscaping and groundwork and take care of the lawns and the grass and the trees and the shrubs.
And very exciting is also to learn that the bridge, which used to be plywood and plaster for the Lord of the Rings, is now built with a very firm construction, a steel construction, and it's actually done with stones, with true stones. And so they're going to just leave the bridge, and you'll be able to use it. It's not a fake bridge. And then the inn, is it the Green Dragon in near, or is it another one? I always forget. I think it's the Green Dragon. The inn is also constructed as a real house, so you can enter it. It has a fireplace. It has the plumbing and everything. And apparently, there are plans to turn that into a real pub after filming is done, and that depends on the owner of the location. And then Quint is like, can you imagine the number of, you know, Hobbit geeks marrying in under the having their wedding ceremony under the party tree, and then doing the reception at the Green Dragon Inn across the bridge? How cool would that be? I mean, they could charge, I don't know, $50,000 for a wedding like that, and people will still line up to do that.
That's true.
Oh, wow. And apparently after this was a genius move, I think, from both Peter Jackson and the owners of the premises to send Quint there, because he's been receiving a lot of inquiries about how to get there. So I think we'll see this huge crowd of Middle Earth tourists going to Matamata now to see these sets, because it's the most accessible location, and you do get a tour that is really, you know, Tolkien related. So yeah, I think it's going to be a favorite. It's definitely a destination you don't want to miss if you ever go to New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
You hear the music in the background, right?
So I did. It means it's that time again. So sad.
We already have to wrap it up, but we still have a few minutes. If there are a few final things that you want to mention, go ahead.
Sure. I did want to tell people that today there is a organized effort to do a Twitter blitz to get the those Road to the Shire guys who are trying to get to New Zealand on the Ellen DeGeneres show, because they support the same charity she does. And so go over to news.mymiddle-earth.net and you'll find an article there explaining how to participate. But you should definitely, everybody listening to this should join in. You know, and by the way, if you happen to listen to this recorded, it's probably too late. But if you're listening live, today is Thursday, November 17th. Join in the Twitter blitz. Let's help these guys get on the Ellen show. And then the other fun thing that I wanted to share is the premiere of something that the Middle Earth Network folks have been working on called My Little Earth, which is dramatized audiobook recordings of public domain sort of fairy tales for children. And they started out with The Princess and the Goblin, and I think it's going to premiere this Sunday night, and then it's going to be on iTunes download for like 99 cents a sort of chapter or section. And it is fantastic. The voice acting, I've gotten to hear some previews. The voice acting is incredible. It's so good. And all the testing that they've done with people, their kids love it. So I definitely recommend you tune in and listen and then go download it. And the people who worked on it are great. There's original music composed for it by Arjun Kiel from Netherlands. And I just definitely recommend people check it out.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Let's see, what else is there to report? Not much. I'm done with my list. I can replug, of course, Once Upon a Time, our podcast, mm-hmm. and we're having
and
a lot
Secrets
of fun
Middle Earth, of course.
Secrets of Middle Earth. That show is doing really well. We have more than 2,600 listeners to that show, and we're getting more listeners every day.
Oh, awesome!
One final thing that I want to ask our listeners is, if you have a little bit of time and you want to do something back for you know, in return for these shows, go over to iTunes and write us a review. Leave us some stars, preferably 5. We want to expand the community around this show and around the Middle Earth Network Radio, but we need your help to do that. We have no advertising budget. So if you have a second, just go over to iTunes, look for Secrets of the Hobbit, Secrets of Middle Earth, and post us a review. We will be eternally grateful, and it will really help us out. And with that, we'll see each other next time on the Secrets of Middle Earth. On the Secrets of the Hobbit, which is also in Middle Earth. Nice save.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.